This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, alongside my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus getting us on and off the air on this Wednesday evening. 2 hours of hockey talk for you tonight. Joining us on the show in about 1 hour's time, Mike Hyka from the Dallas Morning News is going to join us, talk about the Winnipeg Jets' Central Division rival, the Dallas Stars. Haven't seen the Stars yet so far this year. Won't see them, I believe, until about the beginning of December or so. Figured it's a good time to touch base with Mike Hyka, see what's happening in the Lone Star State. And then coming up in about 90 minutes time, he's the voice of the Pittsburgh Penguins, Mike Lang, the Penguins radio voice, is going to join us. You've definitely heard some of his most famous goal calls. He's going to join us in about 30 minutes time to talk about the Penguins, the Jets opponent, tomorrow night at MTS Center. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is illegalcurve.com. I say good evening to my colleagues Richard and Ezra. Gentlemen, you're both looking well on this Wednesday evening.
Yeah, good evening, guys. It's pretty good times here in Winnipeg. It's a good time to be a Jets fan right now with all of these wins and shutouts and all of that. So ready to talk hockey here if I can catch my breath. And
why are you out of breath exactly?
Well, I mean, you know, we only have like what, 2 or 3 minutes between H&L and midweek, and then my
why are you out of breath?
My headphones weren't working, so I had to go get the other headphones. So
Ezzy, you just walked from one side of the room to the other.
Yeah, there was no jogging involved. It's not like you had to go travel a far distance.
It was a quick walking pace.
I don't think so.
It was something, all right.
I was jumping, I was hopping, I was skipping over cords. Anyways,
something I look into a little
Drew,
bit.
Drew, you're looking good too. Let's go here.
Thank you. Richie, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing well, Drew. For a portion of that opening, my headphones weren't working, and I thought I'd be in for a glorious evening.
Not having to hear from either Ezzy or myself.
Unfortunately, they now seem to be functional.
It's too bad. Things were coming up, Richie, for a little bit, but now they're back to normal. Let's get started with last night and the Jets and the Predators, a 3-1 victory for the Jets at MTS Center. They improved to 5-0-1 in their last six games. Guys, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but is this the most impressive streak from the Winnipeg Jets since they've returned to Winnipeg over the last number of years?
I think you can really make that point, and I think if I'm correct, I think you're making that point, and I would say yes, quite simply. I think this is the best they've certainly played since Paul Maurice took over last winter, and the Jets went on that nice winning streak right after he took over. But you look at the way the Jets have played, you know, starting with that road trip, I guess really starting with the Colorado game, because that was the beginning of the undefeated streak, and that was a good game, and Colorado I didn't think played very well, Richie, but you start off with that road trip, and the Islanders game, as we talked about on last midweek show, that was an ugly game. And then we had Ken Danico on. We were previewing the Devils game, and I thought that, you know, that Jets Devils game, the Jets could have easily won that game, you know, 3-0. I didn't think the Devils were very good at all, really missing a guy like Mike Camilleri. They couldn't really seem to generate any offense except for that one Michael Ryder goal. But the way that they've played defensively, I think, is even better than when Paul Maurice first took over. And that starts with Andre Pavlik and the defense. And, you know, I looked over to Richie during yesterday's game and I said, Shea Weber, in my opinion, is the best defenseman on the ice, but I think Jacob Trouba on this night was the best defenseman on the ice. And that's why he got a star in the game. I really think Jacob Trouba has elevated his game. Let's be honest, guys. A lot of guys have elevated their game. Andrew Ladd and Brian Little elevated their game on that road trip. Blake Wheeler's been good. Mark Scheifele's been good. Got that big goal last night. But to me, it all starts with the commitment to defense. And that's really what we've been talking about really for the last 3 or so years here. And they're starting to execute. And sure, if they got lucky, you know, Chicago hits a couple posts, Richie, that changes the outcome of the game significantly. But you look at how that they've improved defensively. And yeah, I'd say this is probably the most impressive stretch we've seen out of this team in a really long time.
You know, they're buying into the defensive style of play. And they're buying in, you know, it's the chicken or the egg. Are they buying in because they're winning, or they're winning because they're buying in? You know, probably a bit of both. What I've noticed the Jets doing most of all is not taking chances to create chances. And we spoke about this last night, Drew. Not taking, you know, not risking a 2-on-1 the other way to get one for yourself. and for your team. So what you're seeing is the Jets kind of scoring on simple plays. Now, they haven't been scoring much, and we'll discuss that. But, you know, last night's Dustin Byfuglien slap shot, Landry Ladd tip. There's been a few of those slap shot tip goals, or, you know, wrist shot from Bogosian tip, a rebound goal in Chicago. Same idea, simple plays. You're not trying to do too much on your own. And last night, you'll see Blake Wheeler a couple of times and the Jets a couple of times. When trying to do too much, it didn't work out. But when playing in the simple game, they're succeeding. So Pomerantz has clearly told this team, you know, in some way or another, you're not good enough to trade chances. You're just not. There's not enough talent in that room to trade chances. So they're playing a more structured game. They're not taking as much of a risk. They're clogging up the neutral zone. They're utilizing, for the most part, the very good speed of their top three defensemen, Enstrom, Bogosian, and Trouba. They're coaching and playing to the strengths of the roster. Speed, for the most part, size, not overly physical, but length and different things like that. And they have a pretty good, you know, 1-9 in terms of, it's not dynamic, but it's not awful, right? They have good depth 1-9. They're, you know, 10-12 leaves much to be desired, but, you know, you can only do so much for the players and the coach. So, overall, I've been impressed with the streak. Now, what I want to know and what I'm interested to see on an ongoing basis is how, because if you look back at the games and you see Nashville, that's one, you see Chicago's two, Rangers three, Devils four, Islanders five. That's five games, okay? We mentioned this last night, Drew. The Jets have not trailed in a game since the Islanders were up 1-0 five games ago. And if you watch the past two games specifically, and Colorado before that too, you know, even that game a little bit too, the Jets are generating a lot of chances off neutral zone turnovers on the other team. And now they haven't capitalized on all of them, but chances eventually are going to go in. And why are those happening? Well, they're happening because the Jets are up. If the Jets are leading, early goal in Chicago game, two early goals in Nashville game. Playing with the lead is so different than playing tied or from behind. And teams are trying to score goals on the Jets, and they're taking chances in the neutral zone. The Jets are trapping them, and they're getting chances in transition, and they have good speed to be able to do that. So what I want to know, because I've been impressed with this latest streak, lack of goal scoring aside, Pavlik's been really solid, you know, amazing in the Ranger game, but solid otherwise as well. What I want to know is, do the Jets stay within that structure when they're losing by a goal or two? Or do they then panic and revert back to old form? That, to me, is the next test for the Jets. How do they deal with a little bit of adversity? How do they play when they're not leading?
How do they deal with the Pittsburgh Penguins?
Well, I mean, yeah, exactly. That speed and that skill is going to be an issue, and we'll talk about that. Mm-hmm. But if they get up, Pittsburgh's going to force it. Maybe you get more chances. How do you play if Pittsburgh gets up 2-0? That'll be interesting to see.
And we'll talk about the Pittsburgh game coming up next segment, but looking back at last night still, I want to look back at last night. This is a game where, you know, there's four goals scored in the game in its entirety. One of them is into the empty net, and the other three, well, technically only two of the three were on the power play. The Predators goal came 9 seconds after the power play ended. What did you think of the Jets' 5-on-5 play yesterday? Because really, from my perspective, from my vantage point, aside from the two goals they got on the power play, they didn't really have a ton of opportunities in 5-on-5 action.
And you could say the same for the Nashville Predators.
Sure, of course.
I would say that it was a pretty even game, 5-on-5. And as far as the Nashville Predators go, I didn't think they had sustained pressure on the Jets for very much of that game. And, you know, the goal was weak. Philip Forsberg, you know, squeaks one through Andre Pavlik, and he probably wanted that one back, Richie.
Yeah.
You know, aside from that, he was pretty good for the rest of the game. Didn't have to make any spectacular saves. But
let me just interrupt you to your point there, Ezzy, about not having to make spectacular saves. And I said this to Richard last night.
There's nothing wrong with that, by the way.
There's nothing wrong with that at all. What happened was, I thought he was very big in the net, and there were a lot of opportunities where, had there been a rebound, had the puck dropped to the ice in front of him, the Predators had a lot of traffic in front of the net and would have had good scoring chances. Instead, those shots were gobbled up. They'd hit him right in the jersey, right in the logo, and there was no chance for a rebound at all. Mm-hmm. And I thought that, while the saves themselves weren't especially impressive, I found his rebound control and the fact he didn't give up any really very many second chance opportunities was the most impressive part of his game last night.
Yeah, you're 100% right, and that has been his downfall in previous years, and he's gotten better at that. And you have to give Andre Pavlik a lot of credit. And I know, you know, last week I was getting people riled up on Twitter talking about this, but I mean, you look at his numbers. I mean, his numbers are very good. Is it a small sample size? Is 13 games a small sample size? Yeah, probably. But it's not two games. It's not three games. He's having a good year. He's improved. His fitness has improved. His rebound control has improved. Gary wrote about it today in the Free Press. You gotta give him credit. Now, we're not going to give him the Vezina trophy and the William Jennings trophy right now, Richie, but he's playing better. That gives the defenseman more confidence. Back to Richie's point about how the Jets are trying to play. That really goes to how structured are they really? Are they structured only when they're winning, or are they structured in all situations? Mm-hmm. To me, the Winnipeg Jets are definitely employing a bit of a trap. You see how they've been frustrating.
But every team really employs a trap.
Right, but they're doing it. They're doing it successfully.
Yeah, and successfully with the lead.
Right, and I'm just saying, what they're doing against the New York Rangers, and what they've done against the New York Rangers, the New Jersey Devils, the Chicago mm-hmm. Blackhawks, is they've played very tight defensively. They haven't taken a lot of risk, and you talk about how they've capitalized on turnovers. They're playing patient hockey. They definitely are. They're not playing an open style, fast forechecking, up tempo style. And the problem is the Jets. We've seen them do that. Another point that I'd like to make about last night's game is I think you saw them win the physical battle handily. I think the Nashville Predators, you could see, are not a very physical team. Yeah. You could see Evander Kane, Dustin Byfuglien, Adam Lowry, Jacob Trouba was laying a couple body checks out there. You could see that the Winnipeg Jets were winning the board battles. And they've had trouble in the past against teams like the LA Kings, the St. Louis Blues. We know which teams have come into the MTS Center and have dominated the Jets along the boards. And why is that important? Well, if you want to win the possession battle and win those loose puck battles, you got to win those battles. And I thought against the Nashville Predators, they were doing that. And yeah, Drew, they didn't give up a lot of second chances. The game to me was won on those two power plays early. And how many times have we seen the Jets not score on those power play opportunities and not get the early lead? So you get a couple power play goals, you take the opportunity. I mean, it sounds simplified, but really Peter Laviolette talked about it in his post-game scrum. I mean, they dug themselves in a hole, the Predators, that is. And, the Jets capitalized, and, they've only got, five power play goals on the year here. So it shows you if they can get that power play going, that's just another element of their game that's going to add to their success.
Yeah, and they're going to have to score more. I mean, that's score more without giving it up on the defensive end, right? That's going to be important.
Well, here's Paul Maurice talking about winning close, low-scoring games.
Winning some close, low-scoring games, I think, allows you to make the right reads and not chase the game. We would chase the games at times at 0-0, and I think that led to quite a few of the early chances against in the early season games early in the year, yeah.
Well, that's just what we're talking about. Same thing. I mean, are you forcing it, or are you? How do you play when you're losing? So yeah, you're forcing it 0-0, which they have for sure. Or are you forcing it when you're down? I mean, that's the question. Or do you stay within the structure of the team? Again, it's going to be boring hockey, but it's going to be winning hockey. And if I'm a fan, I like winning hockey. I don't care if it's boring or not. I want exciting and winning hockey when I have Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin. When I don't have those guys on my team, you want winning hockey.
Sure.
And that's exactly what Paul Maurice has been tasked to do. And he seems like right now to have gotten through, which is a good thing.
Why do you think he's gotten through
for Jets fans? Why? Because, again, I don't know, chicken or the egg, right? Is it because they won a few games and they started buying in, or because they're buying in, they've won a few games? It's a little bit of both, Drew. I mean, you beat the Islanders kind of in a... That was a back-and-forth game. Let's not say that was a defensive game. They go in onto Jersey, play a little better, and then Pavlik steals New York. And even the Chicago game, you could say they stole, but you build confidence from winning, and then people are more apt to buy in. The guys who stray from the style of play and that team play are looked at as outsiders, and then slowly they want to buy in. That's how the team works. I mean, the teams work very similar to how any other team works. If you're playing in any sport, you're going to buy in if you're winning. You're going to want to be as good as the other guys. So that's what's happening right now. Again, how do they deal with adversity? That's the next step. It's a good first step right now. How do they deal with adversity is the next step. How do they deal when they're down? That's the most important thing in terms of analyzing this team right now.
And Richie, are they buying in because they're winning? Are they not buying in because they're losing? It's really tough to say. Are they winning because they're more talented? Are they winning because they have a better strategy? Are they executing
more? How much more talented? I mean, the weekend at Ole's last night was amazing. Because I swear to you, I've never seen, Olli Jokinen mailed that game in.
He might as well have
night.
Been wearing a Jets jersey.
I can't believe how much he mailed that game in last night. That was amazing to me. But the point is, how much more talented are they than last year? Perreault, a little bit more talented than Jokinen. Certainly more effective than Jokinen. What else?
We said
it's the same team.
And your point is well taken, Richie, because we talked about this as we were previewing the show and during the first couple
Lowry's
weeks of the
better
show.
Than whoever they had last year.
It was all about internal improvements. And they have improved internally. and it's been 13 games. You know, let's see what they do over the next month, because if they give themselves a chance to be in a playoff spot, which we talked about around American Thanksgiving and into December, you know, we'll be able to make a little bit better of a judgment as far as has this team really changed. But as of now, the last six games, mm-hmm. you have to get from what we've seen, and that's all we can do, you know, in as far as the analysis of the Jets goes. Pardon me if I can say the word properly.
I'm just glad you're no longer out of breath.
They've improved, and you know, they've beat some good teams, and you got to give them credit. If they beat the Pittsburgh Penguins playing that same style, you know, that'll impress me even more.
They're not as good as they're streaky right now. They're probably not as bad as they were before. The question is, where in the middle do they fall?
Well, adversity will come tomorrow in the name and shape of the Pittsburgh Penguins. When we come back, we'll preview tomorrow night's Jets-Penguins game. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Pass it over to Simon Dupre. Simon looking. Now turns and shoots it towards that loose in front. Crosby finds it and in it goes. Sidney Crosby dancing around the net. Found the biscuit. He puts it in. Oh, slap me, silly Sidney. Those magic hands. Too much for Corey Schneider.
Penguins radio broadcaster Mike Lang on a Penguins goal call there. He'll join us on the show in about an hour and 10 minutes time from now in the second hour. The Penguins and the Jets tomorrow night at MTS Center, a 7 p.m. puck drop game you can hear live on TSN 1290 and, of course, being broadcast on TSN 3 as well. So, gentlemen, we talked about the Jets competition, and this is certainly a step up when you're facing the Pittsburgh Penguins. You look at their record so far, 8-2-1 this season. They're averaging 4.09 goals per game, which is number one in the NHL. 45 goals in 11 games. Defense has been pretty good as well. 10th in goals against per game at 2.09. 23 goals against in 11 games. Third best in the NHL. They score a lot and they don't give up a lot. What's the secret to success against the Pittsburgh Penguins tomorrow night?
Yeah, and Marc-Andre Fleury is under contract for four more years, so they know who's the goalie's going to be. You mentioned the goals. They're scoring four goals a game, and it's no surprise that Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin are at the top of the scoring list early on this season, but this is a bit of a transition year for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Actually, it's an understatement to say that with the new coach, the new GM, everything like that, another disappointing second-round playoff exit. Nothing has changed, really, as far as the Pittsburgh Penguins go. It's the same old Pittsburgh Penguins team that can score, really, on three lines. And I know that there's been a little bit of a transition for Evgeny Malkin playing wing, Richie, and mm-hmm. Pascal Dupuis has moved down to the second line. But that Chris Kunitz-Sidney Crosby line hasn't really lost anything from last year. And Patrick Hornquist has really filled in nicely there on the top line. As I mentioned, Pascal Dupuis is now actually playing left wing. But it's a different team, I think, as far as their approach goes. And Mike Johnston came in and he said that they wanted to play a little bit more of an aggressive style and a little bit more of a creative style. I think, Richie, with the Pittsburgh Penguins in the past, and this goes back to the Philadelphia Flyers, it goes back to the Columbus Blue Jackets, to beat the Pittsburgh Penguins, you had to rough them up. And we saw that with Sean Couturier. We saw that with Brandon Dubinsky. You put a guy on Sidney Crosby. Not just a guy. You put your top defensive player on Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin. You shut those guys down. Who's going to score the goals? And they are top heavy. They're absolutely top heavy.
Well, yeah, that hasn't changed. I mean, aside from Steve Downey, who's crazy and he's tough. You know, it's Nick Spaulding. But I think it's a mentality that you're speaking of there.
Yep. It absolutely is a mentality. And I think, you know, you go out and you get a Steve Downey, and you know, he, even though, as you mentioned, he can sometimes put himself in awkward positions as far as the penalty box goes, awkward positions meaning he goes a little bit nuts, but you know, the Penguins to me are at a crossroads as far as this team goes. A guy like Brandon Sutter, I've really been impressed by. I think he's come in this year and he's improved his offensive game and his conditioning and all that, because, you know, we'll ask Mike Lang about it, but Brandon Sutter to me has never really filled that third line center role like they wanted him to. Mm-hmm. As far as the offensive side of the game, yeah. I think he's a better defensive forward, but he's trying to get better. You know, he's still young enough to get better. I'd like to think even at my age I can still get better. But you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins, you know, they're
can't get much worse.
They're a team that if you fall
look at
asleep,
that low blow there.
If you fall asleep early on this team, they'll bury you. And over the last, I don't know what the stats are, but I think over the last 3 years of the Winnipeg Jets 2.0, I think they've only beat the Penguins a few times. I think it's only two or three. I don't think it's either. It's
well, their first win coming back was against the Penguins.
Yeah, well, you know,
that was a number of years ago, though, and Crosby wasn't playing.
They beat them last year too.
Did they beat them last year too?
I think they did.
I'll have to remember. I'll take your word for it. I'll look back at that. But
when
anyways,
you look at tomorrow night and you look at the matchups, I mean, what are the Jets going to do? I think likely you're going to see what they did in Chicago was they line, and Nashville doesn't have the depth of any of the, or even the top skill level guys. You know, you have your James Neal, Ribeiro line, and all that, but Jacob Trouba drew Jonathan Toews almost exclusively on the road in the Chicago Winnipeg game. So
The key being on the road, it's harder to do line matchups generally because you have the first change as opposed to the last change.
I probably would lean towards Trouba and Stewart drawing Crosby, Hornquist, and Kunitz tomorrow, meaning that Bogosian and Enstrom would draw up against Malkin, Dupuis, and Como, if that's the way they're going to line up. And Malkin, I think, you know, the question is, Bogosian and Trouba can both skate. I just feel like Trouba is going to draw the Crosby card, and I think Bogosian against a guy like, you know, Malkin in the corner and such, although it's right wing and right defenseman, so they won't cross pass as much, might be something that happens there. So that's if you look at it that way, the matchups are going to be very interesting because that job, and I speak about the two defensemen on each of those pairings, it's not a job for only two guys. It's a job for five guys against Malkin and Crosby. So how do you deal with that? What do you do with your top two lines, and who are you going to match up with those guys? You know, I think they feel comfortable with these three lines right now, and kind of whoever it is, but they can control it at home more so than obviously on the road. So I would expect them probably to go, you know, head to head with their best guys against Pittsburgh's best, because I don't know if they're going to lean. I think the Scheifele, Kane, Wheeler line has at times traded chances / not been the best defensively. So you might see Little's line tasked with Crosby, and then the other guys will take their chances with the other lines. That's what I think may happen. I'm not positive on it, but it'll be interesting nonetheless to see how they match up, because this is a different thing than Nashville. It's similar to Chicago. In terms of Kane, because Kane was matched up against Bogosian and Enstrom all night, really. So that's the kind
Patrick
of
Patrick Kane.
Yeah, sorry, Patrick Kane. So that's how they matched. That's how they did those matchups. So I'm really interested to see how the team plays now. You talk about style and things like that. Pittsburgh does things really quick. Like if you watch Crosby, everything he does is so quick. And when you're playing trying to play a more defensive style, you back up a bit. You give yourself more time to make decisions and play off of turnovers. These guys don't make as many turnovers and mistakes, and then they make plays so quickly. You have to be always with your head on a swivel. So tomorrow's game to me is a fascinating game for where the Jets have come.
I think so too. And if you want to talk about a statement game, which I know you guys hate, but it's a statement to me in the sense that it proves that they can beat the best team in the league right now. I think so. I think Pittsburgh right now is playing like the best team in the league. I think it's playoff time nears. I think there's teams in the Western Conference that can easily beat them, but you go back to the Nashville game, the Penguins aren't the Nashville Predators. So to me, the team that wins the 5-on-5 battle wins this game. And I think if you're going to take penalties, and you might have to take penalties to deal with Pittsburgh speed, they're going to burn you because they have the best power play in the league. So I think you're talking about a game that has to be won at 5-on-5, and they're going to have to play their sharpest. And this is not a team that you're going to keep to 0 or 1 goals. I mean, and if they do, then we know that Winnipeg's really onto something.
Scoring 4 goals a game, their power play is 41%.
Yeah. I mean, these are ridiculous numbers. I mean, it's just that simple. You don't see numbers like this really through this many games in the season. It's one thing to do it through, you know, through 5 games, through 6 games, but they've played 11 games and their power play is up in the 40% range.
And there are some issues there, and I still have issues with the defense. And you hear Paul Martin. Is Paul Martin going to be traded? We've heard that from the insiders. And you look at a guy like Simon Dupre, I expected more out of his development. He's kind of stalled a little bit to me. And, you know, they're a team, though, if you've got a 3-goal lead, Richie, you can cover up those defensive mistakes, especially when the team's pressing and they're behind. So the Pittsburgh Penguins get up on teams early, and you know you can mask some of those mistakes. And I still think you know the Pittsburgh Penguins will probably want to get more of a defensive defenseman, a guy like Christian Ehrhoff. He's not your prototypical shutdown defenseman.
I agree. Their D isn't good enough. I don't think the benefit for them is they play in an awful conference. The Eastern Conference is very bad.
Sure. Let's talk about the game from the Jets forward perspective versus the Penguins defense. And you just said that their defense isn't very good. They're without Olli Maatta, their young defenseman who's undergoing surgery to remove a tumor.
Successful.
Which is good. We, of course, wish him the best dealing with that. But you look at this defense, and there are areas where the defense can be exploited. The problem is the Penguins never give up the puck.
Well, I mean, yeah, that is a problem. Now, if you're looking at it from that perspective, Drew, I mean, you have to make guys defend, like Letang and like Ehrhoff, and make them sure they're not, you know, you want to have them cheat in the neutral zone a bit. So, I mean, this defense can be taken advantage of. I think the Letang and Martin have been playing together. That's a combo that can really skate. So you may see them draw out you're going to see them draw out probably against the Little line or against the Scheifele line. But the way they can skate pretty well, you wonder if it'll be the Scheifele line they'll draw, and then the other guys will draw the lad line. That's, you know, they go by threats and what they consider to be threats. Frankly, the Scheifele line hasn't been really gelling that well. I mean, they have chances that the chemistry seems a bit off.
Yeah.
But if you look at it from a talent perspective, and Wheeler's probably the most talented forward on the squad, so they're probably going to throw that defensive pairing. The Jets, I wouldn't be too concerned about the Jets with what my matchups are in the back end. I don't love any of those. I don't love any of those defensemen on Pittsburgh to be absolute shutdown guys, but it's easier to play defense when you're on the offensive zone. So that's the key, and it's a transition game too. It's how aware the forwards are of where they are and where the Pittsburgh forwards are.
Looking at the third line, I mean, the depth lines, and we talk about it. I mean, you look at the Jets' fourth line, and it often gets a lot of criticism because there's nothing much there. You look at the Penguins' fourth line, same thing. You got Zach Sill, Marcel Gotch, and Craig Adams. The third line, Spaulding, Sutter, and Downey. I mean, you know, I think the Jets would take Byfuglien, Lowry, and Perreault over that third line.
If you're comparing it as far as offensive production, maybe. But I think, you know, that line for the Pittsburgh Penguins I like it a little bit better, actually. Nick Spaulding's an underrated player. He's an energy forward. He's not going to give you tons of offense. And Steve Downey, I think at this point, is not going to give you tons of offense, but it's an energy line. And, you know, I think Brandon Sutter has improved offensively. But, you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins, if their big guns are killing you, then you're done. And we've seen them do that against the entire NHL this year. So, I mean, it's the same old story. We'll be talking about this when the playoffs come around. They're the two best players in the league. So, I mean, you want to talk about the third line isn't as good as the Jets' third line. Okay, but, you know, if Crosby, Malkin, AL are doing their thing, isn't that a moot point?
I probably would agree with you.
Well, I mean, you can look at compensation, too.
Sure.
Not the setter's cheap, but, you know, the Pittsburgh third line, I mean, I'm more concerned probably about their top six squaring it up later on with Malkin and with Como on up there. Oh, yeah.
You don't love Blake Como?
Blake Como's on top 6-4 in the National Hockey League. Their third line, you know, they're going to be loading up those top two lines with that much talent. Third line may not be great. I think the third line does serve its purpose, so I agree with Ezzy there. You know, it's not going to be that dominant line, but they're mobile. They like to be physical. They can play in the corners. They can do different things. And they're fairly trustworthy for the most part. I think Brandon Sutter is a guy who needs to kind of come into his own. It's interesting that Rutherford actually traded Sutter to the team that he's now general manager. I think we've talked about that before. So you wonder what the confidence is like, at least from the beginning, on that relationship. But it was to acquire Jordan Staal, and to Ezzy's point, he hasn't filled that role like Jordan Staal did. And granted, he doesn't get paid like Jordan Staal. But I don't think that third line is necessarily the concern. I think they want to square up the top six, and their biggest concern is probably adding a defenseman, if not two defensemen.
I mean, the Jets' third line is 3 goals, so it's not.
Yeah, I mean, Perreault has 3 points, Byfuglien has 4 points.
They're not tearing up the NHL, but I mean, I agree with Drew, though. The third line over last year is better. But they need
paging
more
production. Eric Gingratti.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about Marc-Andre Fleury and the new contract he signed today. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
good. Really happy. You know, I think I've spent a lot of times here, and you know, it's like my home. You know, my teammates, I've been with them for a while. The organization's been great to me all these years, and the city, the fans, and you know, couldn't be more happy.
Yeah, you've had your share of ups and downs. What does it mean that the team has stayed true to you?
It's nice. You know, I think it's good vote of confidence, and you know, I think you learn through those tough times, and you get better with it. And looking forward for the next few years.
Pittsburgh Penguins goaltender Marc-Andre Fleury signing a 4-year contract extension with the Penguins earlier today. 4 years, $23 million, an average annual value, a salary cap hit of $5.75 million. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. This segment of the show is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Best potato salad in town.
Best potato salad in town. I agree with that statement right there, Richard Pollock. Marc-Andre Fleury can now afford $23 million worth of potato salad, which is a fair bit of potato salad, really.
Which is what you'd call a daily consumption.
Yeah, that's about what I usually consume, about $23 million a day in potato salad. You know, what are your thoughts on this contract? This is a guy who is sort of much maligned because of his playoff performance when the Penguins have needed him the most.
He shouldn't be anymore. I mean, you know what? I'll let Richie get in here because he can, you know, analyze the contract a little bit better. But, you know, as far as his age, we were just talking about this off air. You look at his age and what he's done in his career, how he started. He's already had back-to-back shutouts this year. His goals against is under two. And, yeah, sure, of course, it's early. But, you know, last year, I thought he was excellent. And the year before that and the couple of years before that, he struggled. You look back at the New York Islanders series.
Sure.
In the first round, but that was 2 years ago. But you look at how he played last year. Let's be honest. The reason why the Pittsburgh Penguins lost last year, I mean, there's two words. Henrik Lundqvist. Lundqvist, sorry. I've been saying it wrong. I was told I was saying it wrong. But, I mean, the Pittsburgh Penguins couldn't get the timely goals. They couldn't get it from Crosby. They couldn't get it from Malkin. They couldn't get it from Brandon Sutter. So, to me, Richie, you know, you sign him to 4 years. You're not giving him an 8-year contract. You're not giving him the old Ricky DiPietro 15-year contract. You're signing him to 4 years, 5.75. I think you could argue he's a top 10 goalie in the NHL. I think sometimes, you know, everyone gives him too hard of a time for some of his poor playoff performances. Mm-hmm. But look at his numbers. I mean, they're year after year, he puts up good numbers. Sure, he's playing on a very good offensive team, but I like the contract, but, you know, maybe you have a different opinion.
I have no issue. I think this is actually a pretty solid contract. I would ask you to tell me where you think $5.75 million drops Marc-Andre Fleury in the goalie contract number next year. Overall, out of all the NHL goaltenders in the National Hockey League, what will his cap hit be amongst those?
Like top 10, top 20, something like
that?
What
number?
15.
I would say 10.
13. So he has it pretty well. So the 13th highest cap hit, Lundqvist, Rask, Rene, Price, Ward, Crawford, Schneider, Miller, Bishop, Varlamov, Lehtinen, Quick, and then Fleury. Okay? I mean, I think you're taking your chances that he's in the 10 to 20 range and best goalies in the league. If that's the case, and I think that is the case, then you're looking at a really good value for what you got. You got 4 years, as you mentioned, not 10 years. Obviously, you can't do 10 years anymore, but not 7 years. You know, if you want to look at save percentages, well, the guy's save percentage has been the past 5 years, 918, 913, 916, 915, and then this year, 931, obviously, in nine games. But remember that he's also playing for a team that can trade chances left, right, and center, a team that is well aware of what he can do. Sure, he's had goaltending shortcomings in the playoffs, and sure, that does worry me. Yeah. But it's also about who you can replace him with, what you're going to do. Do you replace that chemistry? There's many factors. I have no issue with the contract. I have to say, if I'm Marc-Andre Fleury, I'm far more confident in myself based upon the way Jim Rutherford has handled this than I was before. Because Jim Rutherford has said since day one, really, we're going to get this guy signed. This guy's a good goalie. We're going to get him signed.
And he did.
I don't think the old management, whether right or not, had the confidence in Fleury that Rutherford does, and you wonder if that'll pay off.
Let me tell you why the old management probably didn't have the same confidence, and it will go to save percentage over the last 5 years. You want to talk about that? 899, 834, 883, 915, 905. Mm-hmm. Those are the save percentages in the playoffs over the past 5 years for Marc-Andre Fleury.
He hasn't been good, Drew, and I acknowledge that. But again, he's also won the Stanley Cup, making a diving save at the end of the game on Nicholas Lidstrom. It's not like he hasn't done it before. Sure. I realize the World Junior mishap before that. But he's a talented netminder, physically. Like, he covers a lot of ground, he's quick. Yeah, sure, he makes sometimes odd decisions and he has these bad games, but overall, where are you going to go? You're going to go replace him? You're going to trade something to replace him as opposed to just paying him? I have no issue with this contract. I like the 4 years. I think it's a good deal.
And I think, you know, back to my earlier statement, because I know people are probably, you know, thinking, oh God, as he's saying that, you know, he's a top 10 goaltender. Whether or not he's a top 10 goaltender or a top 20 goaltender, I think we'd agree that he's a bona fide number one goaltender. And, you know, I always think back to the beginning of the season, previous to the season starting, actually, you know, Justin Goldman of the Goalie Guild coming on, and he said, really, after the top three or four goaltenders, there isn't a big difference between the fifth best goaltender and the 25th best goaltender. That's what he said, and he knows goaltending a lot better than I do. So my point really is that I think you're signing a goaltender who's a proven number one goaltender. He might not be that top 10 goaltender, but for me, you know, you know, just listening to what Richie's talking about, you know, Grant Fuhr wasn't posting great numbers for the Edmonton Oilers when they were winning all those Stanley Cups. Now, I'm not saying that the Pittsburgh Penguins of 2014 are the Edmonton Oilers of the mid to late 80s. I'm just saying that I think that, you know, when you think about what Marc-Andre Fleury has done growing up with this team, Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, all these guys, I think that does factor in here. And I think, you know, there's always the chance that if Marc-Andre Fleury again struggles, maybe you bring someone in to challenge Marc-Andre Fleury, but I think Richie makes a good point. Going into the beefy part of the season here, heading into the playoffs, it's nice to know that you're under contract. Because that could be a distraction, knowing that Marc-Andre Fleury, even though he's had all of these issues in the playoffs, fighting the puck and letting in soft goals. I think, Drew, if you know that you're a UFA and you're hearing, and in this day and age, we start doing the trade deadline preview in October. So I think it's a good idea to sign him to 4 years at this point in the season. And again, he's got to prove it in the playoffs. And like I said, I think this team is at a crossroads. I don't think that the window is closing here, because Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin are still in their late 20s here. It's not like their best days are behind them. I still think that they're both competing at a very high level. But I think that they've got to prove it here, because I think, you know, the Penguins will probably end up acquiring a couple of players, as they always do, the veteran guys for the playoff run here. But I think they're getting a little sick and tired of losing in the second round. I think there's too much talent, too much money there for this team to constantly be losing in the second round of the playoffs.
Who are they going to sign in the market to? What if they do let him go?
Well, that's a good point. Here, the free agent goaltenders next
year. Have you looked at it?
What's that?
Have you looked at the list?
Well, Antti Niemi is at the head of the list.
Whose coach didn't trust him to play him in the end of the series last
year. Sure, you're right. The free agent goaltenders are non-existent, really. So unless they had somebody coming through the pipeline to replace him, which they don't, at least not immediately.
No, John Gibson there.
No, it seems as though the only option was to sign him like they did.
I think Drew makes good points, and you have to consider that
it
a save percentage.
Very often.
No, it does, and the save percentage in the regular. Pardon me, the playoffs isn't very good, but were people really confident in Corey Crawford 3 years ago?
Well, he's been more established than Corey Crawford is. And the other thing is, like, this isn't like a Dion Phaneuf. We're going to lose him, so we sign him because we're going to lose him. I don't think that's the rationale. I think they actually wanted to sign him.
I agree. And I think, you know, back to last year, I think Marc-Andre Fleury played well last year, and I don't think it was like 2 years ago where Marc-Andre Fleury, his performance was significantly worse against the Islanders.
Sure.
To me, it really, I mean, I remember watching, I watched every game in that series. I mean, the New York Rangers, and you got to give the New York Rangers credit, they're a good defensive team. They couldn't generate any offense. And to me, that's what it was. And to me, the biggest issue with the Pittsburgh Penguins is the defense in front of Marc-Andre Fleury and having that secondary offense. And that goes back to what you're talking about, Drew, in you know, the first round of the playoffs, second round of the playoffs, if Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin aren't scoring, and that's not something that you usually have to deal with, it, but it happens. I mean, look what happened when they put Sean Couturier on Sidney Crosby. He shut him down. And you can shut these guys down. Everybody's human. He's not a superhero, even though, you know, sometimes Sidney Crosby plays like a superhero. You know, it's a team game. So I think, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury has proven himself, to me at least, that there aren't those question marks.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll look around the Central Division the week that was there. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to TSN 1290, online TSN1290.ca. This is NHL Midweek. This segment of the show is brought to you by our good friends at the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or visit them online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, thought we'd spend the next couple of minutes ahead of Mike Hajka joining us at the top of the hour from the Dallas Morning News, looking at the Central Division and the week that was in what has traditionally been referred to as the NHL's toughest division. Do you think that, you know, is that moniker still appropriate for this season, you think?
Yeah. I do think. I mean, granted, we'll talk about Vancouver and Calgary later. So, I mean, you could argue, obviously, the Pacific as well, but it's between those two. That Eastern Conference.
Woo!
It's bad.
Yeah, there's a lot of question marks in that Eastern Conference, and a lot of teams that are still at this point in the season still really trying to find their games. I think the New Jersey Devils are definitely one of those teams.
In second place?
I think the New York Rangers.
Second place?
I know, and they haven't impressed me at all. Have they won a game at home yet?
Yeah, the Jersey?
They won one or two.
Two games at home they won.
Yeah, so
well, I mean, one against the Jets, going to get the win.
2-2-2 at home.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a team that is still trying to find itself, but yeah, it's still the best division in the NHL, Drew. I think you've seen the Colorado Avalanche struggle. I think you've seen the Chicago Blackhawks struggle.
Well, they broke out of that Jets. Yesterday against Montreal.
I wouldn't look at records right now and read too much into it. I mean,
well, let's talk about that. The sort of, because we'll talk about a little later on the show about Calgary and Vancouver, both of whom are tremendously exceeding expectations. Staying in the Central Division, let's look at Colorado. They're 3-6-5 to start the year. You know, they're a minus 10 in their goal differential, 33 goals for, 43 goals against. Everybody sort of had pegged the Avalanche as a team that was supposed to drop back.
Yep.
Because they had bad advanced statistics, they had bad analytics last year, and they exceeded.
That's the reason why, Drew. I mean, their defense isn't very good.
Well, I know, but sorry, that was one of the reasons why people pointed to them as that way. You know, which Colorado team is real? The team that's 3-6-5 and in the bottom of the Central Division, or the team that was at the top of the Central Division last season?
Well, I think the when you started with the Colorado Avalanche, Richie, it's a very young team. If it's not the youngest team, it's got to be one of the youngest teams. For me, the Colorado Avalanche, and I mean, Nathan MacKinnon's got 4 or 5 goals now. He didn't have a goal through his first 10 games, which, again, I wouldn't read much into. I mean, the guy's in his second year in the NHL, and he was still getting a lot of chances. I think he had something like 25 or 30 shots in those first 10 or whatever games it was before he scored a goal. So, again, the Colorado Avalanche, is there a hangover from last year? What is it? Is this really who they are? I still think they're going to be a playoff team. But as far as the Colorado Avalanche go, you've got kind of, to me, a defense that doesn't match up with the speed of the forwards. I don't think you have a defense that is as mobile as they want it to be. Mm-hmm. And you bring in Brad Stewart to kind of give your defense a more veteran defensive presence. But that's not making you quicker.
Now he's injured.
So. And now he's injured,
out 2 to 4 weeks with a groin injury, I believe.
Yeah, and so you have an issue where you don't have, and I know a guy like Zach Redmond, former Winnipeg Jet, they've used him, and he's had varying degrees of success.
I mean, Zach Redmond.
Well, no, but
I mean,
he's a guy that can move the puck. So, I mean, they need more guys like him that can move the puck, as opposed to Andre Benoit, for example, last year, who couldn't move the puck.
Well, I thought Andre Benoit was better than Zach Redmond, is he?
It's possible. So, I mean, you look at the Colorado Avalanche, and you know, they're a team that right now isn't really suited for sometimes the way they play. And did they rely too much on Sergei Bobrovsky? Yes, throw the records out the window. I mean, they don't award playoff spots in November. So, I mean, you know, you got to give the Calgary Flames credit here.
We'll talk about them coming up.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it's 12 or 13 games here.
I mean, Varlamov's not the problem here. I think the problem is, as you mentioned, as either defense, and the forwards haven't got going yet either. I mean, Duchesne and MacKinnon. MacKinnon's getting going now, but Duchesne and MacKinnon registering 9 points in 14 games. They're both better than that. You know, Gimlet need to get going a bit. What about O'Reilly? So, I mean, a bunch of the guys are off kilter right now. The concern I would have is a report from Adrian Dater today, who follows the team as closely as anybody. And his report was that the team seems to kind of be complacent. They seem, maybe because he suggests, maybe because they all got paid. He said there's not the passion there was last year. There's not the motivation there was last year. Maybe they think they're better than they are. Last year, they were out to prove everybody wrong. It's an interesting spot to be when you're expected to be really good. It's a lot harder to be good when you're expected to be good than to be good when you're expected to be bad. And expectations, guys. And that's a big thing, too. Patrick Waugh, you know, how does he approach the season? How does he deal with the team for the second year? Everything's fresh that first year.
Well, you look at that. I mean, you look at that game last night against Vancouver. They had a 2-0 lead against Vancouver, if I'm not mistaken, and they end up losing 5-2 on home ice. I mean, at some point in time, that's troubling. That's more than just a bad game at some point in time. It's more than just a blip in the radar, and it becomes something that's more of a troubling issue for the team.
Well, your issue, I'll give you the if you want. I mean, the simple issue is you've allowed 43 goals, and you're allowing shots, bleeding shots, which means, you know, that problem last year, obviously, is that they were bleeding shots, but their guys were scoring. So you can't have both. If you're the Avalanche, you can't have both. You have to either capitalize on your opportunities or not allow as many shots. I mean, that sounds simple, but it's true. And if you hear Shane and different guys, they have chances. They're just not capitalizing on them as often.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. And I wouldn't be too worried about it because I think there's so much talent on this roster. I think the Colorado Avalanche are going to turn this thing around. But, you know, you can't rely on maybe some things that masked their inefficiencies last year. And I think Sergei Bobrovsky often stood on his head. And, you know, you talk about the complacency in the guys that are under contract. That could have an issue. But, I mean, again, you know, you have to find a way to fight through early season struggles. And I think Nathan MacKinnon has. He started to put the puck in the net. And I think the Colorado Avalanche are going to have to maybe look at making a move for possibly improving that defense.
Well, you know, to your point about, you were talking about Adrian Dater's blog post, he starts the blog post with, okay, everybody can start worrying now. So this is a guy who covers the team for years and knows the team more intimately than anybody else. And he's saying that there's genuine cause for concern with how the Colorado Avalanche are playing. Well, you got Patrick Waugh calling out Jerome McGinley in the media after a game last week also. I mean, that's got to be a little bit awkward, doesn't it?
Well, no, that's his job, is to motivate his players. What about Gabriel Landeskog? Nobody talks about him.
Does he have 4 points?
5 points in 14 games. What about him?
Yeah, well, that's bad. Those are bad numbers.
It's the captain of the team. I think, you know, this is a team that last year far exceeded everyone's expectations. Maybe some people picked them to win the division. I certainly didn't.
Nobody picked them to win the division.
I don't think many people did, Richie. And, you know,
but nobody picked them this year either, really.
Right. I mean, is there a hangover from that? Does that start to play with your psyche when maybe you don't feel the need that you have to improve certain nuances in your game? Because this team, we know, has all the skill. But again, the games aren't won on paper.
Up front, they have the skill. And in goaltending, they have the skill. They don't have the skill on defense. They weren't picked to win the division this year either, but they were picked to make the playoffs. That's an expectation.
Right.
And how do their young players deal with it? Again, this is a young core. As you mentioned, you know, MacKinnon, Landeskog, a lot of responsibility has been put on the shoulders of these players. Duchesne, O'Reilly. That's five guys right there. Who are your core guys? Your five core guys. Duchesne, MacKinnon, O'Reilly, Landeskog is at four. And, I mean, what you're doing there is you're putting a lot of responsibility on those guys, and then you have Tanguay and Iginla to kind of help them along, right? It was four guys. But those four guys have so much responsibility that you better be sure they can all handle it. And I actually think they all can handle it. I think they're just going through a blip right now. But you look at last year, okay? Your defense isn't good enough. I mean, anybody can tell you their defense isn't good enough. So I'm just restating the point. Unless they're big guys, if Landeskog can't have 5 goals, 5 points in 14 games, Gale Riley can't have 8 and 14, and Duchesne and MacKinnon can't have 9 and 14, respectively, if they have any chance, because they're not playing a defensive style. Like, you look at the Jets stat sheet, okay?
Yeah.
Nobody scored. But at least lately they've been playing defensively, so it doesn't matter as much. The Avalanche are playing open style and not scoring. Can't have it both ways.
Right, and that's what all of the analytics pointed to, that the Colorado Avalanche were due for a correction because they were relying too much on Semyon Varlamov. And I think that tells part of the story, but I think it also has to do with how the team plays defensively. It's not just the defensemen. And sure, you'd probably like to have, I don't know, a Tobias Enstrom, or you'd like to have somebody on that team who's a little bit better offensively. I think Tyson Barrie and Eric Johnson are good defensemen. I think you go down the roster, Jan Hayda is a decent defenseman. I mean, they're not the worst team in the league defensively,
but
they have to improve as a team. And I think, you know, that includes the forwards. I think we've seen with the Edmonton Oilers as well, you can have tons of talented young forwards, but if they don't buy into that team defense, then you're going to give up a lot of goals.
We'll keep an eye on the Colorado Avalanche, and when we come back, we'll talk about the Dallas Stars in the Central Division. We'll be joined by Mike Hyka of the Dallas Morning News. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Dallas Morning News. He covers the Dallas Stars, Mike Hyka. Mike, good evening, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself, Mike?
Doing great. I was getting a little cool down here. I get worn out by the heat in Texas, so it's about 60 right now, and that's good.
Okay, well, you're up in Winnipeg in December, so I think it'll be a little bit cooler than that when you're up here.
Yeah, I can stand it, though. I like the cold.
Okay, there you go. Mike, the Stars are 4-4-4 so far through 12 games, a perfectly symmetrical record. But you look sort of a deeper in the minus 7 in the goals differential, 35 goals for, 42 goals against. You know, how big of a concern is that goals against number right now for the Dallas Stars?
I think it's huge. We sit there and watch practice, and all the media guys, radio guys and everything was just jaw back and forth, and one of the guys is like, look, they're, you know, they're 500, there's no panic, you know, everything's fine, and I'm of the mind that their expectations were they would be much better than this. The expectations were that they would be a solid offensive team, that they wouldn't, you know, have fallen apart defensively, that they'd have solved their backup goaltending questions, and they haven't. I mean, they're a lot of the same things that have dogged this team for the last 5 years are still right there, and you know, you can look at the analytics of it if you want to, where the, you know, shots for, shots against, lack of play, face-off success, you know, the goals against, the save percentage, all those indicated. But just looking at them, you're like, this isn't a good team right now. Just watching them, it's not, they're not fun to watch, and so I think they got a lot of things they got to work on.
Mike, last game, the super line, as it's being called, was broken up. That was, of course, Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, and Jason Spezza. Was it just time?
Yeah, you know, I actually like that line, but they have to spread out the scoring. The other thing is Alex Hemsky has done nothing. I think he's got one assist on the year. And Val Nichushkin just came back from an injury. So it's hard to play those guys with, you know, Vern Fiddler or Sean Horkoff. You got to give those guys a playmaking center, and so you know they're trying some different things right now. It's Ben Sagan, Nichushkin, Eric Cole, Spezza, and Hemsky. I would personally like them to try Hemsky on that top line and see if maybe Nichushkin has chemistry with Sagan. But you know, anything to at least get those two lines, you know, so that they have some scoring depth, I think that's moving in the right direction.
Hey, Mike, you speak about, you know, Alex Hemsky, and it seems like, you know, he may be a fit on that top line because he's really primarily a passer. I mean, it's probably most disconcerting that he has, what, but one assist this year. Goal scoring has never been his forte, and is he just being miscast right now, or how are they going to approach that?
It's really confusing, and you know, we try and ask the hard questions, but a lot of them are just, you know, well, we just think this works better. And Lynn's been really good with us. But when they signed Hemsky, even Jim Nill said, you know, of course, the thought process was, well, you're getting him because he got Spezza. And Jim Nill said at the time, we, you know, Hemsky was on our target because we think he's a playmaking winger who would be great with Sagan and Ben, who are basically a goal-scoring center and a goal-scoring winger.
Right.
And so, you know, on paper, That makes perfect sense, and they have not run that line once in preseason or practice. And I'm not sure why, because, like I said, even Jim Mill said in summer that it made sense to have those three together. So we'll see. I don't know what Lindy's thinking on that. I think he wants to get Nichushkin up and running, but Nichushkin was out of lineup for 9 games, and he never tried Hemsky up there once. So I'm not exactly sure, you know, what his thought process is on it, but I would try it.
You know, you mentioned Nichushkin, right? Again, obviously he's played 3 games, and they have to get him going, as you mentioned. Coming into camp, and you know, he certainly had some explosive moments last year, but also he had his rookie moments. Do you see him, you know, where do you see him on the curve for a sophomore?
I think he's actually in a pretty good place. The learning curve for him, to me, I think is going to go up sharply whenever he, quote-unquote, gets it. One, I think the language was a huge barrier last year. He spoke basically no English. And so Sergei Gonchar kind of served as his translator. They have a Russian guy here who helps him with that, but he doesn't go on the road with him. So simply understanding what the coaches are trying to do as a team, I think he'll be miles ahead in that regard. I think playing on a smaller rink, he's starting to understand that. They're putting him on the right wing, even though they're kind of right wing heavy right now. Mm-hmm. I would love it if he could learn to play the left side, but he seems to be comfortable on the right side. So, you know, they're clearly trying to put him in a position where he can show his offensive skill. And so if they continue to do that, he'll either play with Sagan or Spezza. He'll probably play on the right wing where he's comfortable. And I do believe he'll better understand what the Stars are trying to do. So once he gets up and running, he's had hip and groin soreness pretty much since September. And once he gets up and running, I do think his, you know, the curve of him producing on the ice and producing points will go up pretty quickly.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Our guest is Mike Hajka. Mike covers the Dallas Stars for the Dallas Morning News. Mike, in that answer you said about Valeri Nichushkin, you mentioned Sergei Gonchar. He finally played his first game of the season for the Stars earlier this week. You know, how important is it to the Stars' defense to solidifying that unit to get Gonchar back in the lineup?
I think he's pretty, I don't want to say huge, because in the playoffs last year, he was only playing 13 minutes a game. But I think his tone can spread to some of the young defensemen like Jamie Oleksiak or Jurki Jokipaka. Gonchar is just calm. He's a 40-year-old guy who does things, I don't want to say slowly, but methodically, and typically, you know, avoids mistakes. And if he's doing that, playing 13 to 14 to 15 minutes a game, that's really big for this group of defensemen. Because one of the biggest problems they have right now is they're turning the puck over. And they're turning the puck over in the third period of a 1-1 game, and all of a sudden now it's 2-1, and then now they start pressing the 3-1, and it's just been a mess for them. They're 1-4-4 at home, and they have been outscored 13-3 in the third periods in overtime of those games. And a lot of those goals have come from turnovers. And if they can just calm the back end down a little bit, and Sergei Gonchar could do that, I think he could make a big difference for the team.
You know, Mike, you mentioned the home record, and I read your blog today, and you were talking about it, you know, the 13-3 and, you know, goal differential in the third period, and you touched on the turnovers and the fact that the power play seems to be really taking away energy instead of really creating energy with a goal. To your opinion, you watch this team on a daily basis in practice and in games. Do you think it's in the Dallas Stars with the current personnel they have to improve this, or do they maybe have to look to the outside, making a move to maybe bring in somebody to make this team better defensively?
I think it's in there in two different ways. One, if you look at what they did last year, Lindy Ruff and the coaching staff did their best coaching when things are going crummy. A lot of times when things are going well, they just left them alone. And, you know, that may not have been the best answer sometimes. When things are going crummy, he really, you know, he used his coaching experience and he changed things and he pressed the right buttons. The defense in the last 30 games last year was great. Trevor Daley and Alex Goligoski, a lot of people consider them, you know, a second pair, masked as a first pair. But in that series against Anaheim last year, they were tremendous. I think they played 27 minutes a game. They exited +6 and +7. They went against Getzlaff and Perry. I mean, they were a top pairing, you know, in the playoffs. So I think they have that ability. And then, you know, you look at Jordy Benn, had a great year. He's not been good this year. Brendan Dillon's pretty solid. Some of the kids are good. So I do believe they have the personnel to fix things defensively. What they have to do is they have to find their identity. And, you know, right now, Spezza, Sagan, Ben, even Hemsky, they're too soft. They're making, you know, hully-gully plays. They're making drop passes. They're flying no-look passes, and those are turning into turnovers too. And what they have to do is they have to find their identity. And once they do that, then the bottom six, I think, is actually really good. The Eakin, Garbutt, Brousseau line has been great. Barkov, Fiddler, Kivior, or Eves are a very nice fourth line. So if they can get the top, you know, the top two lines and the D-man on the same page, I do believe they have it in them. And then they have to get some good goaltending. Kari's been okay, and Anders Lindbäck has been terrible. And so if the goaltending can just take a step up above 900 on the save percentage, and you know, the chemistry of the team can come together, I do believe they have the parts here.
You know, Mike, when you look at this team next season, so I was too early to look at next season, but in the context of this year and the Spezza acquisition, the stars have a ton of money coming off the books. Horkov, Cole, Peverly, and Gonchar. Probably, you know, obviously Peverly with the heart issues and stuff like that, but probably four contracts they'd like to see off the books. What are they going to do with Jason Spezza? Is it last year of a deal? And I know they just acquired him here, but you know, you mentioned kind of the team and the identity that they have, and Spezza probably won't come cheap, but he's also in a new environment now with less pressure and attention than he had in Ottawa. How do you see that working itself out?
A lot of it's going to depend on this year. If I were Jason Spezza and his agent, I wouldn't sign a contract till the season was over. Because we had Brad Richards here, and it went back and forth about trading him and all this stuff, but when you have that ability to at least, you know, study the option of unrestricted free agency, I think you have to keep that there. So then it becomes incumbent on the Stars to, one, play well, and two, you know, make this a place Jason Spezza wants to stay. I think they can do that. His cap hit is $7 million. He's only making $4 million in cash, but his cap hit $7 million. So you could go in the next year and say, okay, let's say we keep that cap hit at $7 million. You know, is it a four-year deal? Is it a five-year deal? Stastny just signed, you know, 4 years at $7 million. You know, that's a range I think you should be comfortable with because you're already there. And like you said, there's a chance you have $18 million coming off the books that you could work on your defense with. So I think that, you know, I think Jason Spezza is a $6.5 to $7 million player, depending on how long you want to sign him. And then you just have to make sure that this is a place that he wants to stay. And, you know, if that all happens, which I think he can, then I think Spezza's here for a while.
Mike, you know, we touched on the power play a little bit earlier in the first question that I asked you, or I guess it was the second question. It's 2 for 23 of recent, you know, memory. When you look at the power play, to your mind, is it just a matter of getting more talent in there? You know, Nichushkin and Gonchar are going to help? What is it about the power play? Why has it been struggling so much? Because there's obviously no lack of talent there.
Right. They have plenty of talent. That's the key. And I honestly would lean on these guys. I mean, when the Stars were at their best on the power play, the first unit did everything. And that's whether that was Modano and Hull, or whether it was Richards and Louis Erickson and James Neal. When they've had power play success, they've ridden the first unit. And I would do the same thing with this one. I think sometimes Lindy's getting them off too quick at 50 seconds or whatever. I'd leave them off it for a minute 30. I think they just got to get to know each other. They've made some beautiful plays. You know, Trevor Daley has been sneaking it down into the right circle, and that's why he's got the four power play goals. But Spezza and Sagan have gotten him the puck through some crowds, and you know they have the ability to make plays. They just kind of have to get used to each other. The one thing that the first unit is lacking is net presence. You know, right now it's Jamie Benn, and he hasn't really been that presence in his career. He's been more of a half wall guy, and so either he has to learn that position, or they may have to, you know, make some adjustments to get somebody in there is either screening shots or is ready for rebounds. So that's the one thing they could tweak, but it's too early in the process. I mean, they've had some beautiful goals. So I just think if you let them, you know, work it out and you leave them out there for a minute 30, I do think they have the talent to fix that.
Mike, we'll let you go on this last question. This is Lindy Ruff's second year as the head coach there in Dallas. You know, have you noticed many changes between year one and year two so far? Does he seem like pretty much the same coach he was from the time he got there?
I think he's pretty much the same guy. I think he trusts his instincts. Like I said, when he was at his best last year, he was solving problems. And he does a great job of that. But, you know, you can actually watch the coaches working, talking. They have a great video coach here. And so you can watch the head coach and assistants working with a video coach. And they really are good when they have something they can get their hands on. And sometimes they just, you know, they let everything go when it's going good, which I think that's one area where, you know, he could tweak it a little bit. But I think he's great. I really do. I didn't know much about him because he was in the East. But this is an old school guy who likes fast-paced hockey, who, you know, likes, quote-unquote, you know, the modern player, doesn't mind the young kids like Tyler Seguin, actually appreciates how they play and how their mind works. So I think he's the perfect coach for where they want to go. You know, we'll have to see how he addresses the issues right now, but I like him.
Mike Hajka covers the Dallas Stars for the Dallas Morning News. He's a frequent guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike, thanks very much for doing this.
No problem. We'll talk to you guys soon.
We'll talk to you soon, Mike. Take care. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290 online, TSN1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest-running independent comedy club in North America. For nearly 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. This weekend, starting tomorrow, the Broken Lizard guys are in town. Sold out on Friday, sold out on Saturday, so we've added another show Thursday at 8 o'clock and 10:30. So be sure to get tickets to see the Broken Lizard guys. You know them from Beer Fest. You know them from Super Troopers. They're at Rumors starting tomorrow. Tickets available at rumorscomedyclub.com. Gentlemen, the Vancouver Canucks and the Calgary Flames are currently second overall and third overall, respectively, in the NHL. The Canucks are 9-4-0 so far. The Flames are 8-4-2 so far. You know, we knew that the Canucks were going to be an improved team over last year. Nobody expected the Flames to be this good. At what point in time can we start looking at these two teams, the Canucks more so as a legitimate threat in the Western Conference and the Flames as a legitimate playoff contender?
I think you've got to wait definitely a little bit longer in the season. I don't think that's any surprise here. But, you know, you look at the Calgary Flames, and they're led by TJ Brody and Mark Giordano, both defensively and offensively. They're both leading the team in points. But you got to give them the credit. They haven't had the hardest schedule. There's a few teams in there that were gimme wins, but you know, you got to give them the credit the way they've played on the road. They're 500 at home, and they're 6-2-2 on the road. And we're talking about beating a Washington Capitals team that could score goals. And we're talking about going into Montreal and beating them 6-2 last week, Richie. So, I mean, you can't take that away from them. And they've got talent there. But, I mean, I still think, again, I don't have them as a playoff team. I think, you know, it's too early. And I don't mean to poo-poo on the parade here in Calgary. You got to give them credit. To me, the Vancouver Canucks are more of a playoff threat. And I think I want to touch on it a little bit in three things I learned this week. I think, you know, a guy like Nick Bonino has really done a nice job in the second line there. And I think Ryan Miller has been excellent. And I think this Vancouver Canucks team really wasn't as bad as their record indicated. It was a gong show last year with John Tortorella. And the Sedins really, I mean, those weren't the real Sedins. I mean, the Sedins are always in the top scoring leaders. So, I mean, it's impressive to see, you know, the Vancouver Canucks, Calgary Flames, second and third in the Western Conference. And you got to give them credit. But, you know, we got to see them a little bit more here before we start to give them too much credit, I would say.
You know, you look at how well the Calgary Flames have played, and they're 2 points ahead of LA and San Jose. Both those teams have a game in hand. Like, that's how tough that division is as well, right? So you have to, it's context. Sure, they look good. I've been really impressed with the way they've played, how hard they've played. their young talent. But at the end of the day, they're 2 points up in LA and San Jose, both of whom haven't gotten going yet. So that's a concern. Now, in terms of Calgary, Calgary's core has really been, well, strength has really been their defense. Giordano and Brody, such a good core there, you know. And Weidman's come along a little more since being challenged, and a guy like Chris Russell, you know, moves the puck pretty well. You look at Vancouver, and I think Ezzie's nailed it, because really you have a team on paper has changed a bit, actually quite a bit. But they not only changed on paper, they've changed organizational mentality. You know, more accountability, more respect. And I think it was Ed Willis or Jim Jameson in Vancouver papers today talking about Alex Edler, how he wasn't coached in the proper manner last year based upon his confidence level. He's a guy who needs to feel like he's, you know, people want him to be there, and he's a good player. I think Tortorella was more of a negative force. And Alex Edler before Tortorella and during Tortorella was a different player. And this year he seems to have reverted back to old form. Ryan Miller has solidified the goaltending issue. There's no controversy that was so poorly handled by Mike Gillis. Even Milan Vigneault and Tortorella. The blame goes out throughout that tenure of how the goaltending was handled. There's less distractions, you know, and that's the thing. Benning comes in, there's less distractions. The focus is on hockey now. So you have your Sedins, you have Verbata there. Bonino's, as he's going to talk about him, he's a smart player, he's a good player. You've been able to kind of just calm everything down. And, yeah, are they good enough to beat these teams, I think, in a series? No, I don't think so. I picked them kind of as that 9 team, and I think they're still going to be around there. They might be better. They're certainly better than Colorado right now. But Vancouver's a bigger threat. But Calgary is more impressive right now, I'd say, just because their talent level isn't anywhere near Vancouver's. Like a Calgary's roster guy. And they've had some injuries, too. The centers that they put up in that Montreal game, like, you know, nobody can name half of them.
And yet they're fourth in the league in goals for with 41 goals so far. I mean, this is not, you know.
Johnny Gaudreau is very good.
Johnny Gaudreau is very good. We know that. Mm-hmm. But nobody expected him to probably be. I mean, and since he was benched that game before the Winnipeg game, mm-hmm. and then he's been on fire. I think he's almost at a point a game pace since that game. You know, almost eight games, eight points, something around there.
And their top four, out of their top four scorers,
yeah,
three are defensemen.
So you're saying that you don't think that's going to be able to maintain itself.
You can't maintain that. But, I mean, you can't have Brody and Giordano with essentially a pony game and then Weidman with 9 and 13. You just can't have that. But they're playing as a team. Chris Russell's got 7 and 14 as well, guys. They're playing as a team. It's been impressive. You got to love what Bob Hartley's doing there. We talked about that last week in terms of he comes in with a different he comes in hired by Feaster, his guy, the godfather of his child. Feaster's released. Burke comes in there. Burke keeps him around. Trey Living comes in there. He's still around. He's doing a bang-up job. And we said it. If he doesn't get a job, he's going to get a job somewhere if he doesn't stay in Calgary.
He's a free agent after the end of the season.
And we didn't talk about Willie Desjardins, too. He's done a really nice job in Vancouver. He's part of calming those things down, giving the players confidence. You know, it's the environment that you create around the team, right? And Daryl Sutter, amazing coach, went up general manager, created an uncertainty there. But a brilliant coach. John Tortorella came into Vancouver and nuked the place.
And it's two teams that really have no pressure on them at all. And, you know,
that's
true. Talking about
absolutely right.
We're talking about the Calgary Flames, and, you know, really the discussion at the beginning of the year was which Alberta team was going to be worse. And right now, I don't think it's a debate at all who the better Alberta team is. It's not even close as far as I'm concerned. And the Flames have already beat the Oilers once. But, you know, this team is scoring goals, Drew, you're right, and they're keeping it. I mean, Jonas Hiller's numbers after 9 games are ridiculous. I mean, he's a good goaltender who I think in Anaheim was not playing well, and they had other goalies in the system, such as Frederick Anderson, such as John Gibson, who's injured, unfortunately. But, I mean, everything has improved, and you got to give them credit. The Calgary Flames are not an easy win anymore.
And the young teams, we said that when they signed Hiller, young team and Miller, both of them. Miller needs to solidify the Vancouver controversy, but young teams with goaltending, if they make a lot of mistakes and the goaltender doesn't bail them out, they lose confidence. When you have a good goaltender, a veteran goaltender with young players, it gives them so much more confidence because they don't feel as bad about their game when they make mistakes.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Pittsburgh Penguins radio voice Mike Lang. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
25 minutes before the top of the hour, Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca, trying to get a hold of Mike Lang, the radio voice of the Pittsburgh Penguins, to talk about tomorrow night's Jets-Penguins game here in Winnipeg, game you can hear live at TSN 1290 and, of course, on TSN 3. Going to be a very good test for the Winnipeg Jets tomorrow night, Ezra.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, the Pittsburgh Penguins are the hottest team in the league right now. They've won five in a row. And I think, you know, the Winnipeg Jets have done an excellent job shutting down some really good teams. They've shut down some really good offensive teams when you talk about the Chicago Blackhawks specifically. But, you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins, it's going to be tough. And we talked about it in the beginning segment. It's going to be tough to play this type of style against the Pittsburgh Penguins, especially if they get up a couple of goals. So it's a team that you don't want to give them too many power play chances. Right now, it's unbelievable to think, but the Pittsburgh Penguins' power play success rate is at 40% right now. So, I mean, it's going to be a tough game, but, I mean, it's obviously a game the Jets can win. They're playing really well right now. But to me, if you can keep the hot streak going and beat a team like the Pittsburgh Penguins, it just gives you more and more confidence. And this is a team right now that is playing with a lot of confidence. You talk about the road trip, and you got 7 of 8 points, and there's no letdown because you didn't lose to the Nashville Predators. You were able to take care of business, and I thought the Winnipeg Jets really did deserve to win that game, and the game was over pretty early. They got the 2 power play goals, and it's something that really has taken away energy from the Winnipeg Jets and the home crowd in previous years, and really this year as well. I mean, it's been a sore point for this team. The penalty kill's been good, Drew, but the power play hasn't been good. So, absolutely, Pittsburgh Penguins are a big test right now. They're playing well. So, you know, the Jets are got to continue. And
Jets haven't had a ton of success against the Penguins. 2-7 in the last 3 years, outscored by scores of 40-24.
Yeah, we were talking about that. I didn't have that number at the top of my head. But, yeah, I remember the first year the Jets were back. You know, there was that game, I think the Penguins scored 7 goals or something like that in Pittsburgh. But it's a team that can always score in bunches. And, you know, you have to have your full effort if you want to shut this team down. And again, I'm not saying that the Jets can't do it. I'm just saying that, you know, if they play the way they have, and that's, you know, not that's being Captain Obvious here, Drew.
Sure.
But, you know, it'll be that much more impressive because, you know, they got the 5-game road trip coming up. You know, there's some hard games in there, and there's some easy games in there when you talk about the Carolina Hurricanes. But you know, again, they match up decently because they have matched up against teams that are playing more of a transition speed game. But again, that's not how they've been winning lately. They've been winning with more of a kind of a structured, more of a defensive shell type of game.
Sure, and they won't be able to get into a run and gun with the Pittsburgh Penguins. I mean, we've seen what's happened in the past when they've tried that, and it's just been it's been a very entertaining game from a fan's perspective, but it's also been it's been a lousy option in terms of the success of the team, because it's just you're not going to beat the Pittsburgh Penguins running and gunning with them at that point in time.
No, and teams like the New York Rangers have shut the Penguins down in the playoffs, but it's easier said than done. The Rangers are obviously one of the best defensive teams in the league, at least they were last year. So again, you know, this is a very important game as far as showing how the Winnipeg Jets stack up against one of the top offensive teams. We saw that with the Chicago Blackhawks. Pittsburgh Penguins right now have it together. Chicago Blackhawks haven't found it yet. So again, it'll be a fun game to watch. Whenever Sidney Crosby's in town, it's going to be a fun game to watch.
It's always an extra buzz in the building when the best player in hockey shows up. And I mean, it sort of took a while for Crosby to actually play his first game here because of the number of his injury problems and everything
right.
else. But when he's been healthy, it's going to be exciting anytime he's in the building. And then you add Evgeny Malkin as well. And I mean, those are just, you know, I think the argument can certainly be made that those are the two best players in the NHL.
Jets can have a tough time defending against Malkin too, coming off the right wing against a smaller guy like Enstrom who has to give up on the reach, and a slower guy like Stewart. It's going to be very interesting to see how they handle that.
I believe we have Mike Lang on the line now. Mike, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Sorry, I'm a little delayed there. We got a little technical problem, but we got it all worked out now.
Absolutely not a problem, Mike. You know, thanks for joining us here on NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. You know, want to start with Marc-Andre Fleury. Obviously, he was in the news today. He signed the 4-year contract extension. You know, were you surprised at all that the deal got done and at the time that it did get done?
No, I'm not surprised. I mean, I think he's been a solid net binder for them for a lot of years, and you know, the record proves it. I mean, over the last 5-6 years, I think he's been the winningest goaltender in the NHL. He's led them to the playoffs each and every year. And so I'm not surprised. The only thing is it probably was a little later than what most people thought that it would be, but they're sorting so many things out in Pittsburgh with a new coach and new general manager and everything involved. They got to get it, you know, settled back and try and figure it out. And they see the light with Marc-Andre Fleury, and they feel that he's worth it, and so they upped him for 4 more years.
Mike, the Penguins have a new coach this year in Mike Johnston. In your opinion, what's the biggest difference in style of play under Mike Johnston versus Dan Bylsma?
Fairness here, I think that I think that Dan Bylsma probably is a pretty offensive-minded guy himself, but this guy is another step. Mike Johnston is a guy that really pushes the envelope from a standpoint of everybody being involved, and he has implemented a system that I think you guys will see tomorrow night that brings it, and it brings it from the backside out, from the defensemen, and they work very closely. They're a short passing team. They don't use a lot of stretch passes. All of what Bylsma would use in his system. So they'll move the puck very effectively, and they are pretty strong at coming out of their own end. And then when they do that, it opens up a lot of space for them to enter the zone, and they've been able to be pretty successful as far as working down low. And in addition, when they are in the zone, they're a pretty good forechecking team. And they've been a strong first-period squad, too, and they come out with authority, and those have been the things that have been the key ingredients for them. Have they caught the other teams by surprise, maybe with the style of play after a number of years being a little bit different? In all likelihood, yes. And coaches are smart enough. This is the thing. I want to see what happens the second and third time around with other teams, because they'll get used to it, and these guys are so good at adjusting and trying to shut things down. So right now, they're on all cylinders. I mean, they're certainly playing as good a hockey as they have all year long, and the Jets are too, so this is going to be a real good game, I think, these two teams playing.
You know, Mike, we saw James Neal here last night with the Nashville Predators, and of course he was traded this past offseason for Patrick Hornqvist and Nick Spaulding. How have those two acquitted themselves in Pittsburgh thus far?
They played extremely well. They've been everything that you could ask of them. Spaulding has been a guy that can play in all lines, and he chipped in last night and got himself a goal. And Hornqvist is just a dedicated hockey player. I think that's the only way I can describe him. He comes to play every night. And this is to take nothing away from James Neal, because he's one of my favorites as a player. But I think they felt that they needed to make a change. They needed to add a little bit more depth as far as the third and fourth lines. And with Spaulding, they've been able to do that and not give up a whole lot as far as Hornqvist is concerned in losing Neal. And he's fit extremely well with Sidney Crosby and Chris Kunitz, and that's been a bugaboo for the Penguins in trying to get a right winger there that, you know, is a right-handed shot and be able to work with Sid. And he has fit in very comfortably, and has given him a lot. And the way they work the puck is magic. They get two real good, and actually three, because Sid's probably as good as there is in the league at puck retrieval and getting the puck back. And when they do that, they're dangerous, and they move the puck extremely well. Very quick, sharp passes again. And it's just tough to defend. It's not an easy thing to defend. Again, when those guys are going, and they're not afraid to go to the net, each and every one of them. And so that makes them a tough line to play against.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Our guest is Mike Lang. Mike is the Penguins Radio Network play-by-play announcer, talking about the Penguins ahead of tomorrow night's Jets-Pittsburgh game here in Winnipeg. Mike, some big changes in the offseason on the back end of the Pittsburgh Penguins. We know that Christian Ehrhoff came over from Buffalo, and the Penguins lost two defensemen that were solid for them last year in both Matt Niskanen and Brooks Orpik. How has the Penguins' defense looked so far this year as it goes through sort of a period of transition?
Well, it's probably the strongest point that they have is the defensive end of it, not only from what they've got on the ice right now, but the depth in the system. They've got three or four guys that could play in the National Hockey League right now in the Wilkes-Barre. And so that's their strong suit. And, their bugaboo has been the ability to get, as I said, third and fourth line people, and every team in the league is looking for this, so it's no secret. I mean, every team's built pretty much the same way. They're all into the cap, and they're all trying to make everything fit budget-wise. But from a standpoint of the Penguins and their defensive core, you know, they're strong back there. They're not, you know, they're not world beaters, the greatest defense that ever played the game in the NHL, but they're all very solid. And I think that that gives them a little bit of a foundation to work from. Did they lose two really good players? To me, Matt Niskanen's a gigantic loss for them. Terrific player, Brooks Orpik, maybe a little bit on the backside of his career, but, you know, a player that can give you good minutes also. But they've got people to replace them, and I think that's the key to being successful in this league, is to have those people that can come in and fill a role and play in the National Hockey League, not, you know, five or six games, but be able to be ready and do their time in the minor leagues and be able to step in. And I think if you ask any general manager, he'd love to have that situation where he had somebody waiting in the wings where he didn't have to worry so much about having to re-sign players or be able to work along those lines. And how it's all going to play out? Well, we don't know. But right now, they've played very well, at least in the early part of the season.
Mike, I wanted to ask you about Brandon Sutter. Last hour, we were talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins previewing tomorrow night's Jets-Penguins game, and I thought he was really good in the playoffs last year. But to, maybe you agree with this, maybe you disagree with this, but to me, he's always kind of been in the shadow of Jordan Staal amongst fans, certainly probably not the team. But to me, Brandon Sutter, you know, he's got 5 points so far this year. He looks like a guy maybe that's putting a little bit more pressure on himself to get those offensive totals back where they were with the Carolina Hurricanes. Do you see that?
No, I definitely see it, and I think it's a good point on your behalf. And you know, he's playing. He moved up and played some early on with Malkin on the right wing early in the year, and he's just kind of taking his game to another step. I actually feel that this year Brandon is physically a man, and that's, you know, I don't know how else to describe it, but he's kind of moved up to that next level from having ability to compete with men. I don't think he, you know, was quite there until this point of his career, but right now he's playing as well as he's ever played, and he's doing it all in all aspects. He's doing it from face-off wins, from scoring goals, from checking the top line if he has to, and being able to do things. And he's been a very valuable part of the Penguins' success on that third line, and he plays with everybody. And that's the other thing. That's not an easy thing to do for centers, to play continually with different people. And he's a guy that can adjust to it, and I just can't say enough about him. I mean, he's really given the Penguins, and people go down the list of the Pens, and they look at, you know, where strength is, and most people, again, will tell you in hockey the strength is down the middle, is where you want to have it. Well, if you can take Crosby, and then you can take Malkin, and you can put Sutter in there as a guy that can sting you and burn you, then you get pretty good strength, and it's awfully tough for the opposition to defend those three guys with key people to be able to slow them all down. So it's a good observation on your part, and I do think that Brandon Sutter's maybe having his best pro year ever.
You know, Mike, I think it's funny. Excuse me. You look at Sidney Crosby's numbers. He's got 19 points in 11 games, and we're wondering if we even ask you about him, because that's just what we expect from him. You've covered the team for a long time. You covered Mario Lemieux, Jaromir Jagr, obviously Malkin, and Crosby. Where does Crosby fit amongst those four? Maybe what's the one similarity you see amongst those four dominating players?
Well, the first and foremost one is total skill. I mean, these guys are just among the greatest that ever played the game. You know, Sid's a different player, I think, than all the guys that you've mentioned, because he is a guy that just relentlessly never stops going to the puck. And that's what makes him a standout different player to me than the other ones. I mean, when you talk about pursuit of the puck and the ability to retrieve it in traffic situations and everything, I haven't seen anybody really better than him in that regard. Is he as good a goal scorer as the others? Probably not. Is he, you know, is he the greatest passer as the others? Probably not. But everything, when you put it all together for Sid, it works, and it works because he has that incredible passion to want to be the best in the world, and he never lets up. He never lets up in any situation. So that's what makes him such a standout player, and why, I mean, if you don't notice him, something's wrong, because I mean, he's that type of player that you'd love to have on your team, a guy who just wants to win and wants to have the puck in every critical situation.
We'll let you go on this last one here, Mike. Jim Rutherford comes in after a long tenure in Carolina, and Ray Shiro's moved aside. What's been different about Jim Rutherford? We talked about other organizations in the last few segments, you know, Vancouver with the change at the top and how there's a change in culture. Has there been a change in culture in Pittsburgh, or is it still very much that Crosby Malkin team and just a different guy at the top?
No, I don't think it's a total change of culture, but I do think that, you know, Jimmy has his own way of kind of approaching things. He's been successful. He's done, you know, he's won a cup. And he wants to kick the can one more time. He wants to try and bring a cup to Pittsburgh. And that's, I think, probably when you look at the top management of the Penguins, they just felt that they weren't getting the full results that they wanted. Now, you cannot argue with Dan Bylsma's record and what he did with the Pittsburgh Penguins. He won more games, really, than anybody in the history of the franchise in a short period of time. But they elected to go a different way, and they also... I guess, you know, and from their opinion, felt that they needed to shore up some things. And so Rutherford was available, and Jimmy wanted to give it a go. And he's pretty intent on trying to make it a successful franchise and make it a team that can get to the playoffs and succeed and maybe win another Stanley Cup. As far as the culture and how the Penguins operate, I think Mario Lemieux probably is the guy that, you know, kind of sets the tone for how the Penguins are. And it's a pretty well-respected organization in everything that they do. And I think it really starts from Mario on down as far as how the Penguins approach the game.
Mike Lang is the Pittsburgh Penguins radio broadcaster on their radio network. Mike, unfortunately, none of us are named Sam, but we're going to be off air in about 10 minutes' time. Can we still get a drink?
I'll tell you what. You're going to have to buy Sam and get his dog. Buy him a drink and get his dog one, too. It's the only way to do it.
That's all we ask, Mike. Thanks very much for doing this, and enjoy the game tomorrow.
All right, guys. I loved it. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
I think you should start to sing, Richard.
Oh, slap me, silly Mindy.
Finally, permission to hit you, Ezzy. It's what I've been waiting for so long.
Make me a milkshake, Mindy.
Mike Lang with great radio calls. If you've never had the opportunity to hear Mike Lang call a game for Pittsburgh, check him out online. I'm sure they're all over YouTube or whatever else. He's got some great, great lines.
He did TV for many years, too, Drew, and covering some of the great years of the Pittsburgh Penguins. You know, you had the Lemieux years and the Jagr years, and, of course, the kind of Lemieux retires, comes back. Just some of the greatest calls you'll ever hear.
Yeah, Foster Hewitt Memorial Award winner. I think that was about 10 or 15 years ago, something like that. But he's one of the best. Someone I look up to a lot, and Richie mentioned, you know, he's been doing it for a very long time now. And so, yeah, one of the best.
So, gents, what do you think is going to happen tomorrow night? The Jets have been on this hot streak. They've been winning games that a lot of people did not necessarily expect they would win. In particular, that Chicago game, the second half of a back-to-back. 5-0-1 in their last six. They're flying high. Can they? What's going to happen tomorrow night?
Drew, and we talked about, you know, how there would be certain things that will be interesting. I think the Jets will be in tough tomorrow with how much the Penguins come and attack and attack and attack with a heavy amount of skill and a really good puck moving defense. And I think last night you saw a good puck moving defense in Nashville, but you didn't see enough of the forwards able to capitalize on it. I think the biggest thing I take from the interview with that was a very good interview, and Mike Lang was, you know, very informative. I thought one thing, interesting point, I thought that would be relevant for tomorrow is the forechecking. The Pittsburgh's forechecking ability is going to be very difficult for the Jets to handle, and you wonder, if you talk about that third line, how the Jets are able to handle it with, you know, their Klitsam and Postma pairing has really struggled, in my opinion at least. So how they handle that depth as well, and if the Pittsburgh can maybe double shift some of their top guys, maybe they double shift Malkin on that fourth line, maybe they double shift Crosby, and they get a matchup they don't want that works in their favor. I think the Jets are in tough tomorrow.
Give me scores. Give me predictions on the record.
Come on.
You know, Drew, these prediction games, are we're not going to the prediction
game. Yeah, we're not doing predictions. All we'll say is, I mean, on paper, it's easy to pick the Pittsburgh Penguins because they've won five in a row and they're such a good and talented team. But how many people thought the Jets were going to steal 7 of 8 points on the road, right? So, you know, it'll be a good game regardless.
Cowards.
Yeah, you didn't make one either.
That's right. I'm the host. You guys are the analysts. Big thank you to today's guest, Mike Lang, the Pittsburgh Penguins radio voice, and Mike Heike of the Dallas Morning News. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center,
Pittsburgh 4-1,
and Bernstein's Deli.
Jets 3-2.
In case you missed any of the show, we'll be available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website. Follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Michael Remus, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for listening. We'll see you Saturday at 12 noon with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.